Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the past few weeks, we've done a number of shows about the rising rates of cancer and chronic diseases in the United States. And as we've been talking about, we are going in the wrong direction in this country. The doctors we've had on those shows say it doesn't have to be this way. They all advocate a plant-based or mostly plant-based diet. And what they advocate is all based on science and research. The health benefits have been clear for many decades, from strengthening gut health and reducing inflammation to weight loss and lowering the risk of chronic disease and cancer. Research shows that nearly 25% of overall cancer cases could be prevented with diet and nutrition alone. But the problem is only 10% of U.S. adults eat enough fruits and vegetables, according to the USDA. Plant-based foods contain phytochemicals, which protect your body from damage, decrease inflammation, and interrupt processes in the body that encourage cancer production. These foods are also high in fiber, and that's been shown to lower the risk of breast and colorectal cancer and promote a healthy gut microbiome. So today, we are talking about simple and affordable ways to add more plant-based foods to your diet and increase your fiber intake. And if you have any questions or comments, you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today we are joined by two dietitians. Desiree Nielsen has been a registered dietitian supporting people with inflammatory bowel disease for 16 years. Desiree is also a recipe developer with a focus on plant-based nutrition and gut health. She's host of the All Sorts podcast and the best-selling author of the cookbooks Eat More Plants and Good for Your Gut. Desiree Nielsen's latest cookbook is called Plant Magic. She holds a bachelor's degree in food, nutrition, and health from the University of British Columbia. She completed her dietetic internship at Capital Health Authority in Edmonton, which is now Alberta Health Services. Hi, Desiree. Thanks so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Rose.
We're also joined by Katia Galbis, a licensed dietitian and Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Born and raised in Mexico, Katia is passionate about educating the Spanish-speaking community about the benefits of a healthy plant-based diet. She runs the website VeggieCima. Katia Galbis studied nutrition at the Autonomous Metropolitan University of Mexico. She has a certification in lifestyle medicine by the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, certification in vegetarian nutrition by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and a plant-based nutrition certificate by T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Hi, Katia. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rose. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have both of you. And again, every time we're doing these shows, I just want to put this out there that this is not about a judgment or shame. It's really just about talking about the fact that we're going in the wrong direction in the United States. And later in the show, I'd love to find out, Desiree, what it's like in Canada. And then Katia, you live in Florida, but what it's like in Mexico. I mean, the numbers are just are going in the wrong direction. I mean, we did an entire show talking about why so many young people are now getting cancer. And yet there is more information out there than ever. It's overwhelming, to be sure, and we'll also talk about that. But Desiree, given that you've been doing this for about 16 years, what are your thoughts about where we are right now?
You know, it is so interesting because the internet has given us access to so much information that when we're accessing high quality science-backed information, it really puts us in the driver's seat of our own health because we don't all have equitable access to healthcare and healthcare practitioners, in particular dietitians. So when we have this access, it should be a good thing. However, what we see is that we're more confused than ever before. You know, we have an overwhelming body of scientific evidence that shows eating more whole plant foods. And it's not about being vegan, vegetarian. You don't have to put a label on it. But simply eating foods generally in their natural state is overwhelmingly beneficial for us. But we have all of these conflicting voices, sometimes from health professionals saying, you know, vegetables aren't good for you. We should all be eating meat and dairy and nothing else. So I understand how the public can be so confused and maybe kind of wanting to tune us out.
Hmm. Are you seeing the same numbers that we see here in the United States in Canada?
We see, I find in Canada, we tend to lag behind a little bit, but the trends are the same. We have increasing chronic disease, type 2 diabetes, cancer, heart disease, as well as overweight and obesity in our country as well. Our food systems are very intertwined and very similar, but I think we do lag behind a little bit in terms of the overall statistics.
Hmm. Katia, you're now living in Florida, but you have family in Mexico. What are you seeing in Mexico?
It's unfortunate, but it's happening. It's the same in Mexico. I think Mexico was one first place, sad to say, but with obesity rates. Mm. And every time you see more and more young generations being obese, overweight, eating processed food. And unfortunately, we're seeing the same diseases that we're seeing here in the United States.
And what about you, Katia? What are your thoughts about where we are right now? We have more information than ever, and yet the numbers are just going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we need to integrate nutrition into our healthcare. We need doctors, dietitians, and other health professionals to train and learn more about nutrition, right? When you study nutrition for dietetics career, you learn about nutrition, but other health professionals hardly touch nutrition information. So if we can include this training into the health professional, healthcare professionals, would be, I think, easier for the population to receive this information and make it accessible for them.
Let's talk about your personal stories and how you got to this place. Katia, you were a dietitian before going plant-based, and it was so interesting to read that it all started with your father, who's an animal rights activist in Mexico, and he invited you to participate on his radio show to talk about nutrition. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, of course. It was amazing how I never thought, right, starting something from a radio program. My dad was or is still a very strong activist, animal rights activist, and he had a radio program, right? And he invited me to talk about nutrition, about plant-based nutrition, because, of course, the ethical part of eating, it's very strong, right? So I started talking about providing information in Spanish. Back then, that we're talking about 10 years ago, we didn't have access to any information in Spanish. We had everything was in English. So I started sharing this information in Spanish through the radio program. And I noticed there was a lot of interest from our listeners. And then I decided, of course, that this was a sign, right? This was like, there's a need here. So I started my blog. I started sharing and translating information, more information about plant-based diets, and making it accessible for the population, not just in Mexico, but also in other Latin American countries.
What sort of response do you receive from your Spanish content? Because you run a VegiCima website, but also the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has a number of incredible programs in Spanish.
Yeah, correct. Well, since I started my blog and reaching out to this community that didn't have access to this information, people realized that eating a plant-based diet is good not just for the animals, but for the planet, for your health, right? So there was an amazing response. They were interested in knowing how to cook our cultural recipes, our main typical foods, but without meat or without any animal products. And they were surprised that we could keep our flavors without having to add meat or any other animal products. And the same with PCRM. We are trying to expand our programs. We have different ones. We have a Food for Life program where we reach out not just the American or the English-speaking community, but also growing into the Spanish-speaking community, because we know that there's a lot of need and interest as well.
That is Katia Galbis, a licensed dietitian and Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. You can find a link to her work and the website VeggieSema at kalw.org. Click news and then your call. Desiree Nielsen has been a registered dietitian for 16 years. She's host of the All Sorts podcast, best-selling author of many cookbooks. Her latest is Plant Magic. You can also find her work on our website. What about you, Desiree? You've been doing this for some time. How did you become a registered dietitian? And I was listening to your podcast this morning about IBS, really interesting information, and then three best-selling cookbooks. What took you down this path?
You know, it's interesting. The vegetarianism came first for me. I grew up in a Portuguese household where there was a lot of cooking from scratch, but my family immigrated in 1959. So I grew up around, you know, half really traditional food, that everything was made from scratch, and then half sort of North American, you know, shake and bake type of cuisine. So I didn't really think much about nutrition until I hit my teen years. And then, you know, someone that I knew inspired me to go vegetarian. It was the first time that I thought, oh, wow, we can make changes to how we eat, and the way that we eat might influence our health, or, you know, the social or animals around us. And that's really what got me started in going down this line. And I actually was inspired, you know, I started heading to the bookstore looking for books now that I was vegetarian. And I stumbled upon this book called 8 Weeks to Optimum Health by Dr. Andrew Weil, which in the 90s was really just the start of this sort of lifestyle medicine. We called it integrative medicine back then, but it's really what became lifestyle medicine today. And I was so inspired by the power of food to help the body heal. That's what landed me, you know, in nutrition school to become a dietitian. And so I was already vegetarian at that time, and I didn't go fully plant-based until my 30s, because I was an ethical vegetarian. And the more that I learned about our industrial food systems, the more that I realized, oh, wow, my reasons for being vegetarian probably mean that going fully vegan would be more aligned with my ethics. And it took me time to understand, you know, the foods that I would need to adopt in order to like maintain my nutrition, but also because food is so deeply important to me, I wanted to be able to prepare the kind of foods that were so delicious, so craveable, that I wouldn't miss animal products at all. And that's really what led me down the path of recipes, because I knew that one of the biggest barriers is not knowing what to make yourself for dinner on a Tuesday in order to meet your nutrition. Yes, but that was easy enough. You know, we don't have a lot of time to cook, but also so delicious that you'd want to make it again and again.
What do you do exactly as a dietitian?
Dietitians have a lot of different roles. So for me personally, I have a private practice where I have dietitians that see people one-on-one. So no matter what their goals are, whether they want to manage their blood sugars, whether they have celiac disease and are wondering how to implement a gluten-free diet, we sit down with your medical history, your nutritional history, and help, according to the evidence, find the practices and actions that are most aligned with how you live in order to move you closer to your goals. But dietitians also work in education. So I do a lot of blogging. I have a weekly blog. I'm on social media. And so I think we also have a really important role as dietitians to go out where people are. And these days that is the internet, to provide evidence-based and practical information just to help provide a little bit of an oasis of sanity in a sea of very overwhelming voices.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But before we do, Katia, why don't you tell us what you do as a licensed dietitian and also a Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine?
Yeah, of course. I actually combine both. Since I became a Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, I do what I call culinary nutrition. So what I used to do, it was like, okay, I saw patients and say, you know, you have to eat this and you don't eat this. You know, I used to tell them what to eat, what not to eat. But I realized that wasn't effective. It's when I decided to become a Food for Life instructor and apply the culinary nutrition. So we, as instructors, Food for Life instructors, we do cooking classes, right? And then it's just a nutrition education with cooking classes. So we teach people how to cook food without any animal products, right? So these, I find out, was the perfect mix for me because it was more effective. It was more interesting to people to know how to change, how to make changes, right? So right now I do cooking classes, teach the cooking and nutrition classes with Food for Life. And then also help PCRM translate all the resources into Spanish and also develop more curricula for these classes. So we can do diabetes classes. We do health heart. We do kids classes, hormonal changes, you name it. We have 22 different curricula to choose from. And then this way we can provide this nutrition information to different communities, types of groups of population.
That is Katia Galbis, a licensed dietitian and Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She runs the website VeggieSima. It's VeggieSima. We're also joined today by Desiree Nielsen, a registered dietitian, host of the All Sorts podcast, and best-selling author of the cookbooks Eat More Plants and Good for Your Gut. Her latest is called Plant Magic. And we wanted to do this show today because we've been focusing the last couple of weeks about the rising rates of cancer and chronic diseases in the United States. You know, unfortunately, we're going in the wrong direction in this country, but the doctors that we've had on these shows say it doesn't have to be this way. We can prevent and in some cases reverse. Dr. Ornish was on recently saying you can actually reverse early onset Alzheimer's disease with a plant-based diet. Of course, there's a lot of other things there, stress reduction, meditation, exercise, but they all advocate a mostly plant-based diet or a plant-based diet. And so we thought, let's bring on some dietitians who do really great work in this area and talk about what we can do to add more plants to our diet. If you have any comments or questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And because there is so much information out there, a lot of misinformation, if you're confused about what you have heard or read recently, we'd love to hear from you because there's a lot of research and a lot of science out there. and it is easy to cherry pick things. So if there's something out there that you're confused about, give us a call at 866-798-8255 or email your call at kalw.org. Desiree, I was surprised to read that only 10% of U.S. adults eat enough fruits and vegetables, according to the USDA. And the overwhelming majority of people in the U.S. do not get enough fiber. So, you know, given that we live in a very grab-and-go society, people don't have time, a lot of people just don't know how to cook anymore, what are your beginning tips about how to add more plant-based foods to your diet?
Yes. So I think you've really sort of hit the nail on the head as well, because I think people expect that when they make change, it needs to be overwhelmingly difficult. And we seem to think that those difficult changes somehow are more impactful, when the reality is, it is the small, quiet, sustainable habits that dramatically change your health and your energy levels over time. And so if someone is listening to this thinking, I don't know where to start, I can't possibly, the easiest way to increase your plant intake is to start with a couple of pieces of fruit every single day. You know, things that are in season and affordable. Bananas have to be the most maligned plant on the internet, and yet so incredibly nutritious and so affordable. You don't need to prepare it at all. It comes in its own carrying case. So it's really easy to eat a piece or two of fruit every single day, because it requires no changes to your meal structure otherwise. So that's probably my first tip. If you're like, I don't know what to do, that's something you can start today. The second thing—
Before you move forward, can I ask you, because this raised my eyebrows. So I've had gut issues since I was born, and I gave up sugar about three or four months ago, completely gave up sugar. And so what I'm doing now is mashing up a banana and putting it in my oatmeal. So that acts as the maple syrup, and it's so good. And so I'm surprised to hear you say that bananas have been maligned. I haven't heard that.
There is a lot of misinformation and also misrepresentation of fruits and the biological doses of natural sugars that they contain. Oh. Because we as a society generally consume far too many added sugars. Mm-hmm. And the consumption of added sugars in excess is associated with many chronic diseases. We immediately make the jump, well, fruit has sugar, therefore fruit is bad, and it could not be further from the truth. A great example being, particularly as so many of us are thinking about blood sugars, whether or not we have diabetes or simply are, you know, sort of on the optimal wellness internet, fruits which contain sugar are associated with a lower risk of type 2 diabetes. So people who consume adequate amounts of fruit, which do contain sugars, have a lower risk of diabetes later on. You know, we see this very strongly in the evidence. So if anyone would be concerned about the natural levels of sugars in fruit, whole fruits, I hope that that helps to put them to rest. It's just so convenient and accessible.
I'm so glad you phrased it that way, because I should say I gave up added sugars, not fruits. But I think that, and again, you know, thinking about my dad doing these shows, his nutritionist, he was trying to lose weight, and they put him on a keto diet. Mm. And he was so afraid of eating fruits and potatoes and carbs, period. It's like sugar, period. I think carbs have gotten such a bad rap because of the keto diet, but there's a huge difference between a muffin and a potato. So I can see why there's so much confusion out there, not just from what people are reading and listening to, but just the keto diet alone, I think, has caused so much confusion.
It really has. And now we have this sort of keto in the extreme, the carnivores, which are, you know, eschewing essentially all plant matter in entirety. And, you know, the challenge is, just like we make that logical and incorrect jump with sugars and fruit, we do the same with carbohydrates. Without a doubt, we know that a large proportion of the food that we consume in North America is ultra processed. And so these ultra processed foods tend to be very high in rapidly digestible and very processed carbohydrates. But again, you know, there is a big difference between a Twinkie and a bowl of oatmeal in the morning. So the two things are not the same, and they're not the same to your body. And I think the challenge in interpreting nutrition is we still live in, you know, Michael Pollan said this ages ago, we still live in this very sort of nutritionism world where we have a little bit of awareness of like terms. So we understand the idea of like carb. Do we know what a carb is? Not exactly. Like, do we understand that our bodies were designed to run on carbohydrates? We don't. We simply hear that because we eat all of these ultra processed carbohydrates, that's probably contributing somewhat to our disease risk, that all carbs must be bad, when in reality, all whole plant foods contain carbs. Even olives, even avocados. If it's a plant, it contains carbohydrates, and we actually want to eat more of these complex whole food carbohydrates for a lower disease risk.
Okay, so I loved the recommendation about adding more fruit to your diet. And I just want to mention, because so few people get enough fiber, and I really appreciate what you did on Instagram, where you actually looked at how much fiber you get with various foods. And to think that a pear, a medium pear, contains 5.5 grams of fiber.
It's incredible, given that the average American consumes about 14 grams of fiber a day, when the recommendation is between 25 and 38 grams of fiber a day, adding a single pear is almost a third of the average American's fiber intake. Like, it's such an easy win, and we underestimate those easy wins, but those over time are truly the things that move the needle for your health.
Another easy win, a cup of soy milk contains 8 grams of, well, that's protein. So, but protein's really important to talk about too.
Yeah.
A lot of confusion around that. Half a cup of cooked beans contains 8 grams of fiber. Half a cup of cooked green peas contains almost 6 grams of fiber. What other easy tips would you like to share before we go to break?
Yeah, I think the other thing that's just so easy without having to change your meal plan is, how can I increase the amount of vegetable in a dish? So you can serve yourself an extra scoop. If you've made yourself some green peas or some steamed carrots, you can simply add an extra scoop to your plate. If a recipe calls for a certain amount of vegetables, you can chop up a little bit of extra vegetables. And so whatever you're eating, without thinking about changing your meal plan, just double up on the amount of vegetables you put in that food.
Great idea. We're going to take a quick break. Desiree Nielsen has been a registered dietitian for 16 years. She is also a recipe developer and author of best-selling cookbooks, Eat More Plants and Good for Your Gut. Her latest is Plant Magic. She's also host of the All Sorts podcast. Katia Galbis is a licensed dietitian and Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She runs the website Veggie Sema and is passionate about educating the Spanish-speaking community about the benefits of a healthy plant-based diet. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about simple and affordable ways to add more plant-based foods to your diet and increase your fiber intake. Today, we're joined by two dietitians, Desiree Nielsen and Katia Galbis. You can find out more about their work at kalw.org. Click news and then Your Call. Before we get to callers, Katia, why don't you also share some simple tips to add more plant-based foods to your life?
Yes, absolutely. I love this year's recommendations. And actually, I have a very simple and very practical recommendation that I always do to my clients. And it's usually to focus only on four main groups. And this is very, you have to know what to put in your plate, right? So just focusing on only four main groups will make it simple and clear. So what you want to do is to follow the power plate. And you can find this picture on PCRM's website. But the main idea is that you have an idea how to, what foods to add to your plate, right? So you want to divide your plate in fourths. So one fourth is going to have legumes, any type of beans, black beans, pinto, garbanzo, lentils. This group will provide lots of protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals. The second quarter will have whole grains, like whole grain pasta, whole grain bread, brown rice, oats, corn tortillas, etc. Then the next fourth will be fiber. I mean, fruits, like the CEO said, recommended. And try to add all kind of colors, right? So when you look at the fruits, and we have so many colors. So these colors means that you are eating a lot of antioxidants. And I'll always say, try to eat the rainbow, because every color represents a variety of protective compounds, these famous antioxidants. For example, tomatoes, the red tomatoes, no, they have lycopene that reduce the risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, boost heart, brain, eye and bone health. Or oranges, right? That beta carotene fight cancer, reduces inflammation, supports the immune system. There's yellow colors. There's, when there's yellow, there's high vitamin C, flavonoids. When you eat dark green vegetables as well, they have calcium. So the last quarter would be vegetables, and the same, this will provide lots of minerals, fiber, and antioxidants. So I think having or knowing how to build a healthy plate will give you an idea what to add every time you eat, right? What foods to add to your food, to your diet every day.
And you can find out more about that. There's links to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, KALW.org. Click news and then your call. Let's go to callers who've been waiting patiently. Let's hear from Abaya in Berkeley. Hi, Abaya. Thanks for holding.
Oh, hello. What a delightful show you have. Thank you for...
Thank you.
I'm just traveling through. I live in Paso Robles, but I heard the show on the radio and... How wonderful to bring in this show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you found us.
Yes, it's wonderful. I'm about 60. I became vegetarian in my late teens. And then I did some training at the same place Dr. Dean Ornish was, and I leaned towards vegan. But this is a very small question, and you can just bypass it if you like. For some of us that were dairy-free and vegan and eating lots of seeds and plants, and I had a vegetarian non-dairy protein powder, I ended up with a lot of oxalates because I didn't know. I had a lot of spinach and chard, almonds and chia seeds, you know, gluten-free type things as well. And I ended up with way too much oxalate in my system. So now that I've reduced the spinach, I use kale and have a little more limited on the almonds and dark chocolate and potatoes. Sweet potatoes are limited. So I'm feeling so much better. So I just wanted to put that out there that if anyone does a quick change to veganism to maybe move towards those vegetables that have fewer oxalates, and that's, I guess, an idea. It's what I wish I had done the last 20 years. So it's more of a comment than a question, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm glad that you found what works for you, because it can take time and it's such a journey. Desiree, do you have any thoughts on oxalates and what Abaya shared?
Sure. So, you know, oxalates are a naturally occurring compound in many plant foods, such as spinach. Spinach is a high oxalate food. And for some people who have oxalate kidney stones, they may be advised to consume a lower oxalate diet. And so it is important that everybody is different and we do have to find what works for us. Many people can consume a variety of high oxalate foods and feel wonderful. So I'm glad that you have found something that works for you. I'll say this, variety is really your key in all things. Because it's simple to sort of like set it and forget it, oftentimes, especially when we're changing our diet, we can rely on the same foods over and over and over. And when you expand your variety, a variety of vegetables based what's on sale at the supermarket this week, a variety of fruits, a variety of protein sources, not only does that help us ensure that we're not lacking for any one little mineral or nutrient or phytochemical, but that also helps us avoid consuming potentially too many of a certain compound if it's an issue for you, like oxalates.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Abaya. Let's go next to Kevin in San Francisco. Hi, Kevin. Thank you for holding.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the call. I guess it's compulsory for all callers to be almost 60 or 60 and first have become vegetarians, like the last caller. So I'm in my teens and my wife's 19. I'm a stroke survivor, and I'm calling because there's some unintentional, really bad information going out to your crowd that almost cost me my life. About 5 years ago, I went on a very strict diet because although I'd cut out all the added sugar to my diet, I would cheat now and then, and I'd have an ice cream once in a while, and then I would still have fruit. I was still very active. I was a runner, and I would eat a banana before I would go for a run. I didn't have this thing that I have in my arm now. As you probably know, diabetics have to prick their fingers in the old days. They don't have to do it anymore because there's this miracle device that you put in your arm and it lasts for 2 weeks, and you could see on your phone where your blood sugar is at. Nina, if I take that banana that you enjoy and I eat it with oatmeal, my blood sugar will go through the roof, just like about 30% of Americans. In other words, diabetes, I thought when I was a kid, was this rare, weird disease, rather than the fact that approximately, depending on from the medical community, from research, we're being told that 50 to 60% of Americans are diabetic or pre-diabetic. And the consequences are severe. I mean, 40% on the right side of my body is paralyzed. It's a big deal. Wow. And I really want to say that this thing about, like, eat whatever you want, if it's fruit or is okay, is not true. People offer me honey all the time, and I have to explain the body can't tell the difference between honey and straight sugar. And the only fruits I get to have are berries. Because they're relatively low in sugar, but very, very small amounts of them with my cottage cheese or yogurt, et cetera. I'm really glad to be alive. I have a varied diet, still vegetarian, et cetera. I don't buy the carnivore ridiculous arguments. I just want to say that it's not just that two or three of us out in the listening world who have diabetes or that don't know they have diabetes because they don't know the symptoms and they don't get their A1C checked. A1C, three of the most important letters that you can know as a basic awareness of how much of that teaspoon of sugar that makes the human body work in your bloodstream. Most people don't know that either. It's just a teaspoon of sugar that we're talking about. I hope this makes sense, and I don't sound like I'm not. But
no,
I really
not
want to
at all.
People,
I'm glad you called in, and I'm like I said, I'm glad you're here with us. And do you have type 1 or type 2?
I ate myself into it. Like most Americans, you know, the vast majority of us have type 2.
Okay.
That as a kid, I just ate the standard American diet. And when I was being a good vegetarian in Europe, I would have my kilo of chocolate. And my friends would look at me every day and say, Kevin, stop it. That's unhealthy. And I would laugh because I don't drink and I'm vegetarian and I run and I hurt myself. Right. I didn't realize how badly for years and years until the tests started coming back and I started having weird symptoms in my 20s. So,
thank you. And thank you so much for sharing your story. Desiree, you actually have worked with Diabetes Canada, the organization.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on what Kevin just shared with us?
Yes. And thank you, Kevin, for clarifying, because I do think whenever we're giving this kind of information en masse, there are always instances where there is nuance, of course. So when I mentioned the data is correct that eating fruit is associated with a lower risk of type 2 diabetes. However, Once you have diabetes, you now have an individualized response to carbohydrates that everyone needs to find what works for them. So a great example is consuming like tropical fruits might not work for someone's blood sugars. It may in fact cause a spike. Whereas others, when they consume moderate amounts of fruit, particularly in diabetes, my recommendation would be as dessert. So after a balanced meal containing fiber, fats, and protein, which will then moderate the blood sugar effect of that piece of fruit, we have to understand that the total amount of carbohydrate and the impact of that carbohydrate on blood sugar changes in the context of a meal. So for someone with type 2 diabetes, I would be thinking about, as you mentioned, Kevin, lower glycemic choices, for example, apples or berries, but then also how do we consume that fruit? And I would love to see it with higher fat, higher protein, and more fiber, because all of those things will moderate the impact of blood sugar rise post-meal. And so that's why when we have chronic disease, it's so important, A, to know your levels, to know how your blood sugar is responding through appropriate testing, and then working with a dietitian so the dietitian can help customize based on that data the amount of carbohydrate and the type of carbohydrate that will help you thrive and keep your blood sugar stable.
Well, thank you again, Kevin, for calling in to share your story. Today, we're joined by two dietitians talking about how to add more plant-based foods to your diet, Desiree Nielsen and Katia Galbis. You can find out more about their important work at KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Let's go next to Dorothy in San Francisco. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. This is very interesting, and you have been touching on some of my concerns, why I've called. One is food sensitivities and, well, allergies too, but some, like I have a friend who has major autoimmune problems and has a lot of foods that she simply can't eat. The one size fits all is it doesn't.
Right.
I also have gut issues, and I'm going to look for that cookbook. That sounds like it'd be pretty good. But I do cook, but a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. I live in senior housing, and a lot of older people don't cook and rely on what I call ready-mades. I have a friend who lives on Amy's frozen dinners, for example.
Right.
And, they just, fast foods. And a lot of the diet advice is very good. I'm lacto-ovo-vegetarian myself because I'm sensitive to soy, for example. But it does assume that people cook.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't.
You're right.
So I would like to see that addressed.
Thank you so much. And next Thursday, we'll be joined by a gastroenterologist to talk about gut health. So I hope you can tune in for that. Katia, I think that Dorothy brings up a very good point that I think it's really important, and maybe we'll do a whole show on this, but some people don't have access to cooking. Some people don't have time. As she said, some people live in senior homes. I'm thinking about SROs where they just have a hot plate and they don't have access to an entire kitchen. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's a great question and point. We found out that you don't have access to these healthy foods, you don't have to buy the latest, famous food that is the healthiest. But if you stick to the basics, right, to the beans and rice that are simple and expensive and good for you, right? So people sometimes feel like they have to have these fancy ingredients to be healthy. But if we go back to basics and use simple ingredients like rice and beans, there's ways that you can cook even with just a microwave. Actually, we have a class called Healthy Basics, and we plan the recipes so you can make them in microwaves. So you can buy, for example, frozen veggies. You don't have to cook them. You can get frozen fruits as well, or canned beans in a can, right? So there's ways that you can eat healthy, even if you have not access to these, expensive ingredients.
Desiree, do you have anything to add?
I do. You know, particularly for people who rely on packaged and prepared foods, if you're able to spend a little bit more time and be curious about what is out there, it's actually incredible what you could find. So a great example is if you consume a lot of soups that are maybe like a chicken noodle or a cream soup, there are some really lovely canned lentil soups out there, for example, that are going to provide a lot of fiber and a little bit of extra minerals and plant-based protein. And then you can take frozen vegetables like some corn or some frozen broccoli and just pop it into the soup. So that's something that there's no prep, but you've now made a high fiber plant-based meal that can be warmed up in the microwave or on the stove. Another great example is if you consume breakfast cereal, because that's the easiest breakfast for you. There are a lot of breakfast cereals out there with high fiber. And if you're concerned about, well, maybe they're not to my taste, my favorite way to sort of like level up your fiber is to take one high fiber breakfast cereal and then whatever your favorite is and mix it 50-50. So already you've increased the fiber while you're still like getting a little bit of that like cereal and flavor that you enjoy. So there are prepared foods out there that are inexpensive, that aren't the sort of superfood granolas that you can just warm up in the microwave or even eat as is. In Canada, we're big fans of like baked beans on toast. It's sort of like a classic sort of British origin meal. And canned baked beans and tomato sauce are incredibly high in fiber and protein. And honestly, you don't even need to cook them. So just a little bit of high fiber toast and then put the beans on. And that's actually a very comforting, satisfying meal that's also nutrient dense. Mm.
Dorothy, I hope that helps. And Desiree, just listening to both of you talk about this, what would you say to people who are struggling right now to make ends meet? Because we've all experienced this. Going to the grocery store, you look at how much one bag of groceries cost, especially fresh fruits and vegetables. It can be very pricey. So what about adding more plant-based foods to your diet on a budget?
Yes. So I will have to echo Katya here. The first thing that I also want to say is that when it comes to our health, our individual actions are important. The choices that we have available to us can impact our health. But it's also important to say that not having access to healthcare, as well as not having food skills or not having adequate income to purchase these foods, those things play a role. And those are things you don't necessarily have control over. So it's important to give ourselves grace in these moments. Right. But when it comes to saving on the food budget, as Katya said, grains and legumes, so rice and beans, are, you know, inexpensive staples that if you didn't grow up eating them, you might say, oh, well, rice and beans, that can be monotonous. No, there's so many wonderful things you can do with them. Canned beans are absolutely one of my favorite everyday budget superfoods because they are really inexpensive and they're filling and they're incredibly nutrient dense. When it comes to fruits and vegetables, which can be pricey, absolutely look for what's on sale, you know, in those inexpensive staples. One of my favorites that is so overlooked is coleslaw, because prepared vegetables, you know, typically are more expensive, but bagged coleslaw, just the plain stuff, is so inexpensive. It's one of the least expensive prepared vegetables, so you don't have to chop. But also, cabbage is a cruciferous veggie, just like kale, just like broccoli. Cruciferous veggies are incredibly nutrient dense, lots of antioxidants and anti-inflammatory properties, and so easy to stir fry into some noodles or some rice or another grain. You can pop it into a soup. You can use it as sort of like a quick salad with a little bit of dressing for a base of with whatever else you're eating.
And Katya, we have just a couple of minutes left. Do you have anything else to add?
Yes, I would like to say that you can also save when you are buying food in season. Sometimes when there are in season fruit or vegetables that are in season are cheaper than the ones that are not. So this is a thing that you can go to the grocery store and see what's in season, and you will see those are cheaper.
And we'll definitely do shows about the systemic issues that you both have brought up about access to this kind of food, about healthcare. There's really great programs teaching young kids how to cook and how to eat healthier. But again, so much of it comes down to, government action. And so we'll definitely do more shows about that. We have a couple of questions just quickly in our remaining minutes about eggs. A few of our listeners are bringing up our show yesterday with Dr. Donald Abrams. He's an integrative oncologist at the UCSF Osher Center for Integrative Health. And he did not have good things to say about eggs. He actually said in his view, based on the research he's read, they're just as bad as red meat. And Sally writes, I'm in my 80s. I've been a vegetarian forever and have an egg every single day for breakfast. So do your guests malign eggs like Dr. Abrams did. What are your thoughts on eggs, Desiree?
I tend to take a moderate approach. And so what I would say is, the substances that animal products have in them, namely saturated fat, cholesterol, heme iron, think of it as kind of a budget. So for someone who is largely plant-based and eating a lot of high-fiber plant foods, lots of color, but they have this one egg every day, I personally would not be concerned. If this is someone who's far more animal heavy in their diet, so they eat a lot of bacon and eggs for breakfast, and then they have meat, essentially three meals a day, lots of full fat dairy, that's when I start to get really concerned. So you can sort of think of those high saturated fat animal foods as being a bit of a budget. So the more you move in the plant direction, the more you have a little bit of wiggle room for that stuff. But if overwhelmingly you're low fiber, low plant, and high saturated fat from animal foods, that's absolutely when I would want to advise people to start pulling back.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much. And we will definitely continue doing shows about all of these issues. If you have a show idea or a question that you'd like to get answered based on these shows that we've been doing, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to our guest today, Desiree Nielsen, a registered dietitian. She's been doing this work for 16 years. She is host of the All Sorts podcast, best-selling author of the cookbooks Eat More Plants and Good for Your Gut. Her latest book is Plant Magic. Katia Galbis is a licensed dietitian and Food for Life instructor with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She runs the website VeggieSema. Desiree and Katia, thank you both for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.